Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast is number 762. This will probably be a part one, as the information we're going to cover today is a lot. So I'm most likely going to break this into two parts, so that way I can feel free to delve into the depth that I feel like is necessary, but not have to worry about being kind of too long. So let's break it into two parts, make it a little bit easier to comprehend. The topic is going to be training, and the title is actually Training Through Joint and Connective Tissue Injuries. On our social media channels, we have a social media channel, by the way, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. If you don't follow us on any of those, please do. On Instagram, I try to post 2 to 3 times a day with what I hope is very helpful information. So if you're not following us on there, please do that. And one of the things I asked recently was podcast ideas. I asked people for kind of things that they might be interested in, so that way I know at least one person will listen. And what I got in return was one of the requests I got was a really good question, a really good topic. And they requested training tips for people with arthritis in the knee, hip, and back, and other tissue injuries to the meniscus, labrum, or discs. So the disc of the back. Awesome idea, because often people do have to train through those issues. I have quite a few of those myself. I've been lifting for 20 years, and for the first couple years, first 2.5/3 years, I was anorexic. I ate one meal a day and tried to burn off the exact calories of that meal or more. I didn't even understand that you burned calories by being alive, so I didn't even know about basal metabolic rate, which is how many calories you burn just functioning throughout the day. I thought if I burned off the calories I ate, that put me at like a zero in regards to helping me lose fat, whenever I was actually severely under-eating. So I severely underate, really messed up the development of my connective tissues and overall kind of like muscle health. That led into some injuries as I got later into training. Also, I have a kind of a sleep issue in the sense where I had a lot of throat issues when I was younger, had to have a lot of surgeries, and I can only sleep on my stomach with my head to the right. That has led to a lot of poor sleep quality. I went and got a sleep apnea test. I was off the charts, but the machine doesn't work for the condition I have. So I've been told that I get very, very, very poor sleep. So out of 8 hours of sleep, I might net about 5 hours worth of sleep in regards to getting into any kind of deep sleep. So I have very poor recovery, and that has led to a lot of injuries over the years. So that has helped me learn how to get through my own injuries, and has also helped me then learn how to help other people get through injuries. The person who asked for this question specifically stated in regards to competitive powerlifters. We're going to talk about it in regards to just general population, and I'm going to add some details to specifically for powerlifters, but I don't want people to confuse that this is only for powerlifters. I do work with competitive powerlifters who have had these types of injuries, and they still have gone on to set state records and have been like top, top 50 nationally, but like a lot of them top 20, top 10, top 5. And what we've done is just being very mindful of the injury, strengthening the injury, and then correcting their positioning based on their injury. And this can take a long time. Some of the people I worked with, it took 2-3 years for us to surpass what they could do before, but they were doing with pain. So it may have been a long investment in the sense of 2 years, but now they're lifting more than they used to before, and they have no pain whatsoever. So I've helped people become set a bunch of records, get elite totals, do really awesome things, regardless of those injuries. And we've done it in other sports and other kind of areas as well. So let's go down through this. What I want to talk about is kind of the idea, the concept of per workout. If you are dealing with any of these issues, if you're dealing with arthritis in the knees, hip, or back, or connective tissue type injuries to the meniscus, labrum, or disc, like spinal discs, per workout, there's a little bit of an order that we want to address. This isn't 100% perfect all the time, in the sense that some people need extra things on top of the three I'm going to discuss. But almost all the time, these three things are going to be accounted for. So I want to talk about them, give you ideas on how to address them per individual injury issue, And hopefully this will give you kind of a blueprint to start with and how to kind of get the ball rolling back towards lifting without pain. There's going to be a lot of complexity to each individual. So I am going to offer at the end, I'm actually mentioning it now, I guess, that we do help people with these issues. I help people all across the United States and in Europe and other continents. So I have clients in Australia, Austria, Brazil, Spain, the UK, etc. this is one of the best things that I can do in regards to my skill set. So I work with clients all across the United States. I'm no lie. I have clients in California. I have clients in Texas. I have clients in New York, Florida. So everywhere across the U.S., like I said, all throughout Australia, Austria, Brazil, Spain, UK. And it is something that you can address your issue. Whatever your issue is, there is help. You don't have to lift in pain. You don't have to live in pain. There is a way to become better. There's a way to still move forward towards your goals. It can be done. Is it easy? Oh, hell no. But is it possible? Yes. So I want to get that out of the way is if you do want help from this, please reach out. I'm happy to help. If you can't afford any of the services, then take the information from this, put together a game plan, email us with what you're planning on doing, and I'll tell you if it's good or bad. Okay, I'll give you some tips. But if you want the help, it's here, and we're offering it. So if you're interested, let us know. Our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Our website is www.brutalirongym.com. Okay, let's get into this. The three things we want to look at per workout is find a low irritation, high blood flow warm-up. Now, we're going to go through all the examples for each individual injury, but I just want to kind of state these categories first. So the first thing we do is to find a low irritation, high blood flow warm-up. And it's going to be specific to the area that you're trying to address. Then you want to find a low irritation, stabilizing and supporting strengthening exercises. So you want to find exercises for the muscles that stabilize and support the area of your injury. And then you're going to challenge the injury. You want to find work that challenges it enough to remind the body that it's not perfectly healed yet, that it still needs more healing, it still needs more strengthening. The body only fixes things to the amount that it believes is necessary. Unless you go in there and you annoy it purposefully and carefully and, you know, very skillfully, you want to annoy the area because that's going to show the body that it is not healthy. But we don't want to do that till the very end, and we don't want to do that more than what we think it can handle. But you can't go into rehab style workouts. You can't train these issues without some annoyance. And the reason why that's important to accept is our body only changes if it feels like it needs to. It will not put in the effort to become better if it doesn't feel that effort is necessary. We would not go to work unless we were going to get paid for it, right? Unless it's some kind of passion for us. But even then, we're getting some type of return. What is your body's return? If it's going to invest into fixing an issue, it has to believe that that investment is worth it. Our bodies have been designed over thousands of years to minimize energy usage. Waste not. That's what the body is designed to do. You must force the body to believe that effort is necessary. So we're going to talk through this some more, okay? But what you also have to do is in all of this, in the blood flow warm-up, in the stabilization and supporting strengthening exercises, and in the challenging the injury work, you must track progression. You must try to force progression by whatever means necessary. This could be by increasing weight, increasing reps, increasing sets. You can add intensity techniques such as supersets, circuits, drop sets, isometrics. There's a ton. There's more than I could even list in regards to how many I've used with clients. So there are just enormous, enormous, enormous amounts of tricks out there that can force progression in very safe ways. You only get to learn those things by exposure to them, by practice, by learning them, by experimenting. It has to be trial and error. You're never going to know everything before you start. So I have clients come in, and I've been fortunate enough to be skilled enough in this and have done it for long enough that somebody can come in and I say, what's your problem? They start telling me the problem, and then right then I can start diagnosing it. So I remember I went to a powerlifting meet when I was trying to promote a product that we do sell. We do sell weight loadable compression devices that are kind of like foam rollers on steroids. Instead of you rolling on the foam roller, this thing is weighted and it rolls on you. And they are body compression therapy devices, and they're plate loadable, awesome devices. So we have sold those since I think 2017 or 16. We created the first one back in 2015, and I went to a powerlifting clinic, and in one day I worked on 76 people. That was an exhausting day, but it was 76 people where in that moment you're finding out what's wrong with them, and in that moment you're making decisions. I've done that at multiple powerlifting meets. I've actually held therapy clinics at my own gym and gone to other gyms, such as like D1 sports gyms and things like that, and have done therapy clinics. So like 3-hour clinics where you're just fixing whatever problems people have. I love it. It's super exciting. It's exhausting, but it's exciting and it's fun. And in all of those moments, I've done combinations of things I knew and also just things that felt right in the moment. And I've been very blessed. I thank God very much that sometimes something just feels right. Now, it's based on science. It's based on 18 years of, you know, personal training experience. I also have a health and phys ed certification. I have NASM corrective exercise specialist certification. I am an ACSM certified personal trainer. So I have an enormous amount of formal knowledge. Then 18 years of doing this and all of these different experiences, I have a large amount of experiential knowledge. So I do know what I'm talking about, and I feel very safe talking about this topic. And I have a long, long, long client history. I've worked with Olympic athletes, professional athletes, to address these issues, and have been very successful with all of them. With all that said, what I want to go through is some example injuries, some example exercises and ways in which we've addressed them, and giving you an idea of how to start, where to start. None of this is going to be perfectly scripted in regards to you can follow A, B, C, D, and everything works out perfect. But I want to give you some ideas. The person who asked me this has a long, long history of training for their own right, and they have helped other people as well. They're also a physical therapist, so they know probably more about the anatomy than even I do. But that's the idea, is that they're knowledgeable already, so this gives them a place to start. A lot of the people I work with, over half my clients are personal trainers, and I have a lot of physical therapists as well as clients, which is cool as hell. So having some base knowledge is going to be helpful for getting this advice to work. If you have trouble figuring out how to use this stuff, just email me and we'll kind of walk through that. I think that's enough probably hitting around all the issues. So let's go through. We're going to look at the first one here is knee arthritis and or meniscus tear. You can kind of address these in the same way. The meniscus tear is going to have its own different challenges than knee arthritis, but they're also going to follow kind of similar pathways. Per workout, we're going to talk about low irritation, high blood flow warm-ups. We're going to talk about low irritation strengthening exercises for the stabilizers and supporting muscles. Then we're going to talk about how to challenge the injury and how do we relate this to competitive lifting, because that's what the person asked about. So, some of the examples that we've done for knee arthritis and meniscus tear. What you have to do to get the person moving is get a lot of blood into the area of the knee. You want to do this with very, very low or no irritation whatsoever. So, some examples, and if I name things, just write them down. And then YouTube them here, like after, like whenever you want to learn about them. But is banded TKEs, terminal knee extensions. Those are a great warm up. They're very little, if any, compression, just the compression of you standing on yourself. Band stomps, which is another great exercise that has less pressure of compression force than your own body weight. And then we also do use our Concept 2 rower. We just strap the people's feet in, but we don't use the handle. So they just push and pull themselves with their feet. And that works the hip flexors, works the glutes, works the thighs, works all the muscles. Kind of a connect above and below the knee. So those are some examples of three that I use on a relatively regular basis. And those are 99.9% of the time perfectly fine. We even will sometimes get into our empty leg press and do like sets of 20 to 50. The whole idea is you're not looking for muscle damage. You're not looking for muscle strain. You're not looking for connective tissue issues. No kind of challenge to the muscles or the structures. You're just simply trying to get them to move. And by moving them in a kind of circuit superset fashion, moving them with short rest periods, you're going to get sweat going. You're going to get blood flow going through the joint. And that's going to help kind of cushion some of the wear and tear and the injury issue by just having more fluid compression in the joint. And that kind of helps things feel more stable. That helps things kind of warm up and get moving. So that's the idea of the low irritation, high blood flow warm-up, is not only does it help get blood flow through the area, which if they have healthy nutrition brings in new proteins and new healing agents, it also prepares them for the movement by getting a lot of fluid into the joint, which helps the joint feel more compressed and more safe, more secure. Also, as you get going through those more and more rounds, if you do 3, 4, 5 rounds of that stuff, you start to produce a little bit of adrenaline, a little bit of endorphins, which is a little bit of a, like kind of a natural painkiller, which is endorphins, a little bit of adrenaline, which is also kind of a little bit of a painkiller, but more of a mental painkiller, and kind of like a focus, hyper focus, so they can focus in better on the workout. So these are things that we would typically do. I typically will do a circuit of them in some way. So I would do the band TKE, maybe, you know, 10 to 20 reps on the right leg, 10 to 20 reps on the left leg. Then we do band stomps, 10 to 20 reps on the right leg, 10 to 20 reps on the left leg. And then they'll do the rower, maybe 30 seconds to 60 seconds. We'll do that at probably a minimum of 3 rounds, never even add any resistance. Then the 4th and 5th, maybe we'll add a little bit of resistance if it's going well. But that's typically where we start, is a circuit like that. Now, are there other examples of exercises? Yes, there's probably 100 I could think of. So let's just go with a couple and we'll let you experiment from there. Then what you want to do in the workout is move into low irritation, strengthening exercises for your stabilizers and supporting structures. Well, if the issue we're trying to work around is knee arthritis and meniscus tear, then our supporting structures are stabilizers. I'm going to list through a little bit of them and we can think through this. So the first thing we want to work on is single leg balance. By having to balance on a single leg, now let's say your injured leg is your right leg. By having to balance on your right leg, it fires all the musculature that kind of supports and holds the knee in place. Often, some of the pain you will have is related to an imbalance of musculature around the joint. The joint is under-supported on the inside versus the outside, or the front versus the back, and all the musculature leading into the knee from the thigh, which is upstream of the knee, and all the musculature leading into the knee from the calf, which is downstream from the calf. Upstream and downstream will make sense here in a second. I'll talk about those. But the musculature that connects into the knee joint, that musculature needs to be balanced. We want any tight muscles to be loosened in regards to like tenseness. They're not going to like lengthen them, but you're going to loosen them in regards to tenseness. You want the weak muscles strengthened. You want to even out the musculature in regards to tension, strength, tension and strength. What this does is, if we think about a puppet, if we think about the strings that lead to a puppet, if some of the strings are shorter than others, like shorter than they should be, some of the strings are tied in knots, some of the strings are looser, or they're a real frail, thin string versus a really strong string, that puppet isn't going to move evenly. It's going to move all jacked up and weird. Well, that's what's happening to your joint. So typically, when we have arthritis, when we have a meniscus tear, one of the issues that can prevent it from becoming better is these imbalances. By addressing single leg balance challenge, which means basically you stand on a single leg. And you can do that just on your own. You can put foam under your feet. You can do movements while standing on one foot, like banded rows. You can do like using a ball, like a wall ball, and kind of do rotational work or overhead presses. You can do hip hinging, where you kind of tilt at your hips, like let your torso dip to the ground, bring your torso back up, mimicking like a single leg deadlift. You can do rotational exercises with bands, cables, you know, whatever else. The idea is to make standing on one leg challenging. And I typically make the challenge for anywhere from 10 to 30 seconds. If the person can do it for longer than 30 seconds, it's probably too easy. Now that is in most cases. So you want to find a single leg balance challenge that is difficult for 10 to 30 seconds. You're going to do that for multiple sets, typically 3 to 5 sets. But that's one of the things we want to address in regards to stabilization and supporting muscles. The other thing you can do is isometric holds near or in painful areas. So if you have an area of range of motion, a degree of range of motion that's painful, get close to that painful area and then stop and hold tension there. It has been proven by science and blah, 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 that isometric holds, and what an isometric hold is means like you're resisting weight to not move. So rather than contracting to lift a weight, like to flex a muscle, you're not letting the weight move at all, and that's forcing the muscle to flex but hold. That is a very hard challenge on the muscle, but we're actually very good at that. That's one of the best things the muscles can do. That isometric challenge has been shown to increase strength around the degree in which you stop. So if you stop with a joint at 90 degree angle, it'll strengthen like plus or minus 10%. So roughly the 80 to 100 degree angle of the joint. So if your pain starts kicking in around 100, you can stop at 90 and strengthen that. And all of a sudden that 100 gets a little stronger. As that 100 gets stronger, you can creep into 95 degrees on the joint. And you can strengthen that. Then all of a sudden the 105 gets stronger. And now you can use 100 with some weight load. So you can do isometrics near the painful area to eventually work into the painful area. If you can get into the painful area unloaded and then have somebody like load the weight onto you, and that's okay, that doesn't hurt to even hold the weight there. You just can't get into it and load it, but you can get into it unloaded, then have somebody hand you a weight. That's another way in which to do isometric holds. So you can be preloaded, getting into the degree of angle close to the pain, or you can be unloaded, get to the area of pain, and then have someone load you with the weight. So isometric holds in the degree of angle that is related to the pain. So if we're looking at knee, like leg extension and leg curl, these would be very kind of basic examples of something we can do. We can go into a leg extension to a degree angle that is near our pain and just hold it. Again, we do holds of 10 to 30 seconds. I can then do leg curl near the degree of angle that is painful and hold that for 10 to 30 seconds. By holding in those isometrics, we strengthen that area. Eventually, then, you can move through the area like a contraction and eccentric and actually have less and less pain. So over time, isometric holds lead to pain-free movement. The other thing you want to do when you're looking at knee arthritis and meniscus tears is lots of stretching for the hips. The more you stretch the hips, the more you kind of loosen the musculature of the thigh at the top of the thigh, so it's not pulling unevenly from the bottom of the thigh, which is your knee. Also, you want to do a lot of stretching on the calf muscles since they connect into the knee as well. So you want to stretch the musculature above the knee, which is upstream. You want to stretch the musculature below the knee, which is downstream. What upstream and downstream means is towards the center of the body, away from the center of the body. And this just means that anytime we're looking at one spot of the body, we want to also consider what's above it and below it, what's near it. We want to address the things that are near it because that often helps the thing that we're actually looking at. Then you also want to do a lot of strengthening work for the hamstrings. Most people are weak in their hamstrings compared to their quadriceps, which is the front of the thigh. Hamstrings is the back of the thigh. Due to that imbalance, they're going to have a lot of knee pain that they misdiagnose as meniscus issue or as arthritis, when it's actually just really freaking tight musculature in the front of their thigh that's causing the patella tendon to be very tensioned and tight. So then when they go into a degree of bend, the patella tendon patella tendon is your kneecap tendon, by the way. It was already tensioned, and now you're bending it even more, and it gets arguable when it kind of doesn't like that. So doing a lot of hamstring work will balance out the strength of the joint so it's not getting pulled from the quadriceps. So those are some places we want to look for stabilization and supporting strengthening exercises. So again, a single leg balance challenge, isometric holds near or in the degree of pain, the joint angle degree of pain. We want to do a lot of hip stretching, calf stretching, and hamstring work. I would typically do this stuff some type of circuit. Maybe I'll do my warm-up. I'll then do some stretches and then go into like the balance challenge, the isometric holds, and the hamstring work as kind of a circuit. So that, all of that, is just to prepare you to then finally work your knee. And what this means is we have to prepare our body before we can actually use the injury that we're looking for. This is something that's very important to consider. When we look through the process of what we want to do, is we want to prepare the area for work, even if just the preparation is all the work we can handle for now. So sometimes by going through the warm-up and the stabilizer and supporting work, the person's worn out, they can't even do anymore, so they never even get into working the issue type work. This is okay. Eventually, as you do the warm-ups and stabilizing and supporting muscles more and more and more, it'll become easier to get into those tissues and get through those drills, so then you can finally actually get into some direct work on the knee. This is important that we have to prepare ourselves first, because you're laying the foundation for what the strength that you can then eventually develop through the knee that is built off of. If you skip the warm-ups, if you skip the stabilization and supporting work, and you just try to work your knee muscles, like in the knee itself, the issue, and you just hammer it, you're an idiot. You're going to make things worse. You're going to find that nothing really is moving forward. You have a couple good workouts, then all of a sudden it hurts, and then you go back. You take two steps forward, two steps back. One step forward, one step back. You'll notice you don't really make forward progression. This is one of the major problems people run into, is they try to do direct work on the issue, but they never go back and lay the foundation for what that work is going to be built off of. So you must do the low irritation, high blood flow warm-up first. You must address the stabilization and supporting strengthening exercises second. Then you can challenge the injury. Again, our goal when we challenge the injury is to do just enough to remind the body that it still needs to improve the area. The body, again, only heals to the amount that it feels is required by it. I remember, like, I actually tore my meniscus in my knee. I was just standing, showing somebody how to do a sumo deadlift, and I showed them how they needed to rotate their knees outward, and I felt like a slice, like somebody just cut something in my knee, and it was like a rotational slice, and I was like, oh, shit, what the hell was that? And it kind of felt like really stabby, and it just kind of felt odd, and then all of a sudden it started clicking, and then I got an enormous amount of pain as I was trying to work through it. So it took me 6 months to kind of get back to full range of motion without pain. It took me 9 months to where I can go ahead and kind of go back to regular lifting. But since then, I've squatted 585 pounds and deadlifted 700 pounds, which I couldn't do before I hurt my knee. So it was something that took me 9 months to address. But afterwards, I've been totally fine. My knee still clicks, actually, when I stand up and down, but there's no pain associated to it. And like I said, I've gotten stronger over time. So I've competed myself after that injury and have set PRs after that injury. So a meniscus tear is not the end of the world. You just have to be very mindful of how you address it. And it can take a really long freaking time. So it took me 9 months even knowing exactly what to do. So it can take a long, long time. But what you do when you challenge the work is, what are some movements that hurt it, that typically annoy the crap out of you? If that's squats and deadlifts, then you have to find a variation of a squat and deadlift that doesn't hurt. So this is typically like box squats that like help you go down near the area of pain, but the box will stop you if you accidentally go too low. So box squats are typically a very good variation. You can do them with a bunch of different types of barbells, different band tensions, different weight loads, different rep ranges. You eventually get strong at a box height that is healthy. You then start moving the box height down. Now, that's just one example. There are many other exercise examples that work. A lot of sled push pulls are great as well. If you can get into like body weight style movements like walking lunges, leg press, hack squat, things like that are good too. But if we're looking at competitive lifters, you want to get back to squatting. Start with box squats that are above the height of the pain. Do a lot of the warm-up, do a lot of stabilization drills, and then do like, you know, five sets of 3 to 5 reps of a variation of a squat that challenges your knee but doesn't make it worse, and then progress that over time, and it will get better. Same thing with deadlift. You can do, like, if you have trouble getting down to the floor, you can do an elevated deadlift or a block deadlift, a block pull. Some people call them different names. Again, just try to find the range of motion that challenges the issue but doesn't make it worse. But you must challenge it. Okay? So some of the training considerations, things we want to think about, is having rooted support in your feet and hips. What this means is when you're doing squats and deadlifts, you want to twist your feet into the floor. There's a guy named Chris Duffin who owns Kabuki Strength. He has videos on YouTube for called Rooting the Foot, and it's R-O-O-T-I-N-G. So root, like the root of a tree, but you're rooting the foot. What this means is you're just grabbing the floor and twisting your feet into the floor. That activates a lot of supporting muscles in the there's different planes of the body, so I'll skip that language. But instead of just using the front and back side of the body, you can use the, like, sides muscles. So your adductors, like your external and internal rotators. You can use all the groin, the adductor muscles. You can use like piriformis and inner glute muscles, glute med, glute min, those things. And it helps you get more and more support through the knee. So that's one of the keys to kind of helping eliminate some pain, is make sure you root your feet while you're doing squats and deadlifts. You can also start with squats and deadlifts that have vertical shin. Usually, typically, a vertical shin angle doesn't irritate a meniscus tear or knee arthritis as much. So again, that would be a block pull, box squats. There's a lot of variations of those things, like RDL, stiff leg deadlifts, things like that, where you can maintain a vertical shin while still doing some type of hinge work, and that helps a lot. Then you want to test compression versus no compression. Some people actually have pain when they have no compression in their knee, rather than compression forces. Some people have pain while they have compression forces. If you find that your knee hurts worse when it's off the ground, then don't do things off the ground for a while. If you find your knee hurts worse when you load your spine or load your hips and your knee is compressed, fine, then don't do compression things for a while. So there are variations of compression and non-compression exercises that you can play with enough to find ways to still strengthen that area. So that is kind of a little bit of a blueprint on how to go through knee arthritis and meniscus tear work. Okay, so it looks like we're already at 30 minutes, so I've yapped a lot, but hopefully this was helpful. So we're going to call this part one. I'm going to come back for probably a part two and a part three. So hopefully this has been helpful. If you have any issues as you're trying to work through a knee arthritis or meniscus tear injury, again, always, always reach out to us. I have personal experience with this. I've helped a bajillion clients with this. So please let me know if you're having trouble, and we'll always, always be happy to help. So again, our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Our website is www.brutalirongym.com. So hopefully this was helpful. Make sure you please listen into part two and part three. We're going to have some extra information in part three that helps with food, sleep, and blood flow, restoration work, and all that other things. So please keep listening, but thank you for listening to part one. So I'm going to go ahead and sign off. So if you do think this podcast will be helpful to anyone you know, please, please, please share the podcast. Please, please, please. The more people we share it with, the more the podcast grows, the more people we can help. It really does make a difference. So thank you to those who share the podcast. You can share it on social media. You can share it through, email, conversation with a friend, text message, things like that. Okay? Also, if you like this type of information, you can find more from us on our social media channels of Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter under the name Brutal Iron Gym. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, just like the person who suggested this topic, please let us know. The podcast is intended to be whatever you want to learn about. We just want to help people. So whatever you want help with, please let us know, and we'll be happy to do it, really. So you can let us know at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.